Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, I'm Andrew Main, and this is the Weird Things podcast. I'm joined by my partners in Weird, Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
Brian Brushwood.
Amazon's a scam. They're all liars. In my heart, naturalist is still number one forever. my heart
Listen,
was broken.
Man, I didn't want to address it because it's still kind of painful. And the world is just not fair, guys. It's really, really not fair.
That's what people love, are former gold medalists bemoaning the fact that they only got a bronze today.
Yeah, you know, after spending a week at number one, naturalist is now number three. I don't know, guys. I don't know if I can do this show.
Hey, buddy, you doing all right? You still getting
I think
all
you're
those...
still fine. Still a great night. Still a great night.
I even got a congratulatory video from the publisher on Friday with them, you know, with foam fingers saying I was number one.
Oh,
and now it's not true anymore.
Mid video, they hit refresh and then the foam filled finger wilted and they just backed away slowly from the camera.
I mean, if you want to help me out, you're an Amazon Prime member, guys. You can get the Kindle version of this book for free if you live in the United States, United Kingdom, or Australia. And so maybe you can help just get the book. If you like it, please leave a review. Reviews, like now, that's the thing, because I'm trying to build as many reviews as I can.
That's gold.
So, yeah.
I got to tell you, I just had an inordinate amount of fun refreshing constantly for an entire week. And every time I would get a serotonin rush seeing you in the number one slot. But number three, not bad. Not bad at all. The review
yeah.
spread is the thing that makes me the happiest. Like that's a healthy curve with five stars being number one by a long shot.
Oh, yeah.
It's got an average... 422 reviews so far, average of four, you know, the average is 4.5 stars. So I'm thrilled with that. That and just that people like it. You just want people to like it. But, you know, if you've read it and you get a chance to review it, building up the review count is what helps the algorithm. It really, really helps the algorithm.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. So. This is an insane critical response to this book. And it's really only grown over the last week as more and more people have gotten it in their hands. You never know. Andrew, it could again return to number one.
Remember, this is the pre-release. The book actually comes out October 1st, and so we may be looking at the stats of how things go from how your pre-release sales go and then how other things go. We'll see.
That is, it might wind kind of very tight and then sort of explode. When it's released.
I mean, I don't know if I'll hit number, but I mean, again, longevity is really what I want. I've seen the response has been wonderful because people discover this book and they find Station Breaker and they're finding other things. So I see that happening a lot. I'm getting so many new readers. It's fantastic. It's so fantastic.
Yeah, that's what's so crucial is the idea that you now have, because you own all these other books, right? And if mm-hmm. there's one thing that we've understood from the very beginnings of you writing specifically in the ebook world, people burn through these stories and they are constantly looking. As soon as they are done with something that they like, they look for two things. What's another story like this story that may not be written by you? Or what's something else that you've written because I like what you just wrote? And you've got both out there for them and including new different things that are written by you and other things very similar to what you wrote with The Naturalist. So great stuff.
Yeah. I've watched the books I control, not including, you know, Angel Killer and those, I've watched the sales for that just skyrocket. So very happy. I'm very, very happy.
Hey, so can we revisit something we touched on a few years ago that recently popped up on my radar again? And look, I think we're all in favor of going to Mars, right? But
yeah.
I recently saw like an argument pop up on Reddit, and then somebody threw a video at another person saying like This anti-Venusian bias has to stop. It's a bad idea to go to Mars first. Venus is clearly the better thing. The video that he played was a PBS digital thing making the case for let's go to Venus first. Let's do a colony on Venus first because so many of the real problems are very big problems. You know, like we simply don't have the bone density to live on Mars for
I don't know that's true. Go ahead.
Okay, let me put it this way.
It's probably a bunch of women looking to return to their home planet.
Yeah. So the couple of the things that they pointed out is like the gravity thing is so huge, and also the energy thing. Like you just have so much. If we had a full on Lando Calrissian cloud city, we could be, and assuming we could deal with the acidic nature of the atmosphere, basically you could wear a firefighter outfit and an oxygen mask. And stand on the surface of a cloud city on the surface of Venus
and die of radiation exposure. But go ahead.
Okay. Wait, I mean, look. If you have a fight, have a fight with the facts, son. Like at 0.9 atmospheres and healthy gravity and so much more energy, a rich atmosphere with so much oxygen. Granted, it's locked in with carbon in CO2. I don't know. I think it made me feel like it's closer, takes less energy to get there. We could do more trips. There's more energy there for us. And understand, nobody's moving anywhere. Like you could, just yet. So given that we're not moving there right away, why not get our sea legs underneath us at an actual planet much, much closer to the environment? All right.
The proximity once you leave Earth's gravity well.
Yeah, you're halfway to anywhere.
We're going to save a little bit on fuel. That's one thing. Remember, Venus has a day last something like 2 years, okay? So it is ridiculously hot at the surface. And they have to say, we'll have to do cloud. Like Venus sounds great. Like, it's closer. You have closer gravity in this. Oh, great. And if Venus was like we thought in the 1930s, you know, this garden, lush planet, whatever, sounds great. Not this almost feels like tidally locked planet that's hotter than Mercury. Hotter than Mercury. Remember that. The pressure there, the pressure on
again,
Venus.
This is a surfacistic bias.
I'm getting there. So we have to first, so we say, yeah, we're on it. Well, no, we're not going to go on the surface, guys. And whatever resources we want to get, well, remember, we're not going to the surface. We're going to live in the clouds like we do on Earth. Oh, yeah. No, we haven't developed that Earth tech for living in the clouds, but we're going to, you know, we're going to pioneer and develop that on Venus. Meanwhile, we can go to Mars. We can put stuff on Mars. You know, you take a spaceship that can go to Mars. You can land it on Mars and you can live there. You don't have to build this extra thing. What is this cloud infrastructure supposed to be? How cheap is that going to be? Now, if you check out my next book coming out in my Station Breaker trilogy, I do get into how to build upper atmospheric sort of floating stations and stuff. I'm into this, but it's like, yeah, this is what's great because we have these things. Like, how do we – the technical problems we have to solve, you know, we can't even get probes to last on there for more than – again, I know you're thinking surface, Andrew.
Yeah. I mean, like, let go of the surface. Understand we will never do anything on the surface.
I believe we will. But we don't get any of the resources then. We don't get any of the materials. We don't get any of the metals. We don't get any of the things, the building materials. So everything we bring to Venus, other than gases from the atmosphere, we have to bring to Venus into the atmosphere.
Yes, and. The biggest thing we're going to have to solve the same problems, many of the same problems, because Mars will not be self-sufficient for a very, very long time. And given that we're going to have to bring, you know, living off the land will look very different in each of those. But when I think of going to Venus, it's number one, I'm not worried about the fuel cost. Fuel cost, that's a bogus argument.
Right.
It's the time. It's more iterations. There's a reason we sent all the first probes we sent went to Venus, because it's close and it's Earth's twin and all that.
It's 60 days to Mars. What's your problem? What's your hurry, bro?
Well, okay, 60 days to Mars with a magical technology that we've not seen yet.
The ITS, which Elon Musk has said this is the thing they want to build. They're starting to build this thing now. It's 60 days to Mars using what that rocket's supposed to do.
All right, I get it. You hate Venus. You hate Venus, Venus hater.
I think people are waving their Harry Potter magic wand at a bunch of really heavy technical problems there of like, and go to Mars because you can build a lot of cool things with the resources on the surface. You've got water on Mars. You've got these other things. And yeah, and then we're like, well, we'll build this thing in Venus. We can get things from the atmosphere. Okay, then we've got to figure out how to float thousands of miles of solar panels to get the energy. We've got to do all these other things. I'm not saying we'll never do it. I'm not saying that at all. I want to do that. I just think as far as the number of technical problems we have to solve to build this massive cloud city in Venus versus starting a few colonies on Mars, my opinion is that the Venus thing's a much further out thing.
Okay. I think that in terms of being able – because this is the difference, is yes, let's cede that part of the argument. Technically, from a technical aspect, there are new and interesting problems, but you are completely divorcing yourself from the biological aspect. Provided we can solve the technical aspect on Venus, then we're done, because it's an atmospheric pressure that won't require us to wear pressurized suits. Our domed cloud cities, all we have to do is temperature control. We don't have to do pressure control. We float there and at a gravity that our bodies are built with, where our bones don't liquefy and go 10 times the state of advanced osteoporosis like at lower gravities. How do you and you can wave your hands and say, oh, but we'll fix the biological stuff. I don't think we will. I think that's going to be the really hard one.
I don't see how we'll be able to walk around. I mean, we'll be in pressurized domes, or we'll be in these temperature controlled suits. We'll be in space suits, but the pressure, we won't have to, you know, you're still going to be in climate controlled suits to go out there. And you have the radiation issue. You have a tremendous, you're that high up. Your radiation exposure is ridiculous. You're going to be inside of a sealed environment. And that's why I look at it where I'm like, oh, we're walking free on the decks in our Columbia sportswear, and we're feeling fine. I'm like, no, you're dying. It's this intense radiation. It's hostile. The pressure, yes. We could be on the surface of Titan, and we could have Earth-like pressure. Again, actually, better on Titan.
It's not worth the trade-off for Columbia sportswear. I'm just saying, if you're gonna be dying, that's a problem. Brian, your take.
First of all, yes, this segment brought to you by Columbia Sportswear, the makers of fine acidity, sulfuric acid proof windbreakers. I'm talking about in terms of solving the technical problem, like building a dome. We don't know how to make a domed city in a pressurized dome city on Mars. You're talking about living underneath the surface, which is fine, but we can live underneath the surface anywhere. But if millions of
people are in the air right now in pressurized environments called airplanes, you put that on Mars, you cover it with dirt, you're radiation proof. That's simple. We know how to do this. We can build radiation proofing. We've been doing this. We've been building these simple things. I'm like, to me, that's an easier solve than build floating city.
But why does it matter what's easier to me or to you? Neither of us are qualified, and it just I'm intrigued by the fact that everybody, like the reaction is just like you did. It's just like, well, that's just dumb. And then
Brian, I can give you a lot of reasons. I spend a lot of time on this stuff. I spend a lot of time in this thing. You know, I'm actively funding microgravity research projects right now with money I should be spending on other things. I spend time talking to people about doing this sort of stuff. Not that I'm like, therefore I'm qualified, but if you're saying I'm hand waving, I can list you the problems. I say, this is expensive. You're like, that's not a problem. Okay, we have magic money. I say, no, we can't really be on this. We have this radiation problem on Venus up in the upper atmosphere. You're like, no, that's not a problem. I'm like, well, then what would you?
Well, because I think there are biological problems that will persist on Mars that can be mitigated on Venus.
The gravity
thing is such a big deal. Like, it's closer. Energy is much more abundant. Our bodies are more adapted for the environment. The only thing you have to let go of is the idea of walking around on the surface. And once you do that, it seems like we could see a lot of progress very quickly on Venus. I'm fascinated by the instant dismissal that so many people have of the idea.
Mine's not an instance. Mine's based on point by point. So don't lump in that category, because I'm making points of why, from a technical and a cost point of view, and also this health thing. We don't know what the problems could be on Mars. It may be that one-third gravity is going to have problems, and that's why we won't know until we've never had that experiment. We've done experiments with people in microgravity, effectively no gravity, and that's detrimental. We don't know what one-third gravity will do, and I don't think it will be an easy cakewalk. I believe the future of humanity is not on Mars, not on Venus. I think it's in space stations. I think it's in hollowing out asteroids. I think it's creating gravity closer to our own. That's what my belief is. If you're asking me, if you're saying, hey, what do you think? And I'm going to tell you, here are the technical problems. Don't just discount me and say, oh, you're saying nay. I'm saying, no, we got a radiation problem. We don't have a resource problem. I've listed you a number of problems, I say, which is not the same as, meh, I don't like Venus. I've thought a lot. I've read about how would you terraform it? How would you slow it down? How would you do this? How would you try to solve things? I'm in a world where I talk to people who are trying to actively solve this stuff, and I'm curious to hear what they say when they think about these things, because there are people really trying to make these decisions, and what do they say?
Okay. I mean, I certainly can't argue with the appeal to authority. I just think it's really interesting.
Because you're ignoring my points about the other things, about why it's not this easy cakewalk we live on the surface. So
I think you misunderstand my thesis. My thesis is I am fascinated by the disparity, and that's it. And by the lack of interest in even considering trying to create some kind of floating station on Venus first.
No, I mean, there's active programs. NASA's trying to work on how do you do balloon research, things like this. This is interesting. And also, if you want pressure too, another candidate is Titan. If you will live on the surface of Titan, you actually don't have the same. Probably better off radiation-wise. Titan's another interesting place. Titan, you probably could just walk around on the surface with just thermal clothing. You know, there are, you know, very interesting places there. But it's not like the first I've heard of let's go to Venus is right now.
Well, I didn't say any of that. I think there's a bit of an overreaction here. I just think it's interesting that I just thought it was interesting. So, apparently I did something wrong. It's fine.
No, you said, what about this? I said, here's the problem. You're like, you're one of the hand wavers. I'm like, no, I thought a lot about Venus.
That's not what I said, and you know I didn't say that, and I'll not take your stinky bait.
Brian, it's what it felt like, and my feelings are reality.
All right. Hey, listen, guys, I think that there's one place that we can get a definitive ruling on this once and for all, therefore permanently impugning one of your reputations, and that's at patreon.com/weirdthings, where you can continue to fund pedantic arguments like the one you just heard. Go ahead and check it out. patreon.com/weirdthings gets you not only the support of this show, but also early access to After Things, our podcast that we do after this, focusing on the world of the creative entrepreneur in the year 2017. So go ahead and check it out. patreon.com/weirdthings.
We got a tweet from somebody who said, hey, I just reached the end of Weird Things and now I discovered After Things.
I'm
like, yeah, it's the thing we do. You might dig it. So
they all show up in the same feed, right? Or do they show up in different feeds?
No, if you use, I'll tell you what, the thing that changed the game was Patreon doing their own custom RSS feeds. It is a game changer. You do not need adjusting RSS feeds, even through Apple, is a pain in the butt for a consumer, for a creator. It is more of a pain in the butt. If you subscribe on Patreon and get their RSS feed, it is no muss, no fuss. It just, the stuff that you pay for automatically shows up right there. in your feed. If you drop your pledge and now if there's extra stuff that you're getting in there, you now no longer get it, or you get it instantly and you get back catalog access instantly if you up your pledge. If there are bonus stuff, like, just do yourself a favor. Take advantage of the custom RSS feeds on Patreon. It is rad.
And to answer your question specifically, Brian, they're not on the same feed because that is what was asked of us a while ago when we started doing it.
Got it. Yeah. Well, if you're missing out on After Things, get that in your life. It's pretty good.
We could put together, I think we could put together the most awesome space conference possible.
Where it's like it gets settled with chess boxing, where you have to play chess and then punch each other.
It would be a neat, like, get like people who know what the F they're talking about to debate this stuff. You know, that would be fun.
That would be really fun.
Cause I just want to sit there and eat popcorn and watch.
110%, you know, a Politicon, which we went to hawk the contender a couple, weeks ago, really has kind of made their bones in the world of politics on debate culture. The idea that, hey, look, let's book debates like prize fights, and let's have Tommy Lauren and Chelsea Handler debate each other, and we'll see who wins, right? I think that there is room for that, maybe with something a little bit less rage-inducing than politics for some people, but to just say, hey, look, a good-natured, fun thing where people argue about, whatever these topics are is something that could very much be brought to science.
I guess that kind of exists in the whole high school and college level debate classes, but that's always about important issues. I like the idea that it be all unknowable, not big philosophical ideas, but like small things.
Well, certainly, I think Mars versus Venus, go. I mean,
I remember years ago for an amazing meeting, I invited some speakers and I got a prominent physicist and I said, great, he could talk about nanotech. And all he did was just dump all over the idea of nanotech, you know, like, oh, they're trying to start a cult, blah, blah, blah. And that was frustrating. And then I brought up, like, what about space mining? And he said, oh, you'll never make money. Never. I'm like, why? Because it costs $20,000 to put a pound into orbit.
Like, well, what if, like,
the idea of like mining asteroids is to bring it down to Earth, you know?
Yeah.
And I got this resistance to the idea. Somebody, a very well-known sciencey person who I respected, and they're like, yeah, it's $20,000. I'm like, if you're saying your reason is that cost, you're even looking at that wrong. You know, like, it's leaving an asteroid costs minimal amount of energy. And it was just one of that sort of that was a frustrating. And these were, you know, experts, you know, these are people who people go to NASA and to physics societies and stuff for expert opinions. And this was just, it was a frustrating experience.
Wow. So, it was sort of a debate. You didn't mean to book a debate, but you did. The debate was whether or not they would talk about the possibilities that you wanted, or to shut it down.
And also, I think that this, not to relitigate, what just happened, but I think part of Brian, your larger point is, like, it is frustrating sometimes when bigger ideas are just kind of shut down for the sake of being shut down, right? And there's not even the full faith of, hey, let's bat this around, right? Let's just hash it out and kind of lay out the tail of the tape before it starts off as like, well, this is dumb because the reasons why it's dumb. Instead of, it's like, okay, well, pros here, cons here, likelihood of this being solved here, likelihood of this being solved here. It's almost more, there is a tone problem, the likes of which we've kind of based this entire podcast on, that, like, that we don't want to just have this very, like, meh, no, well, obviously this isn't real because meh, meh, meh. It's like, well, sure, of course.
Well, and I think that's one of the things I love about Weird Things is that we're all like, yes, of course it's dumb, it's impractical, it's ridiculous. Also, can we still keep talking about it? Because and explore, like seeded territory at the beginning of this battle that you're gonna win. Now can we have the battle? Like, yeah. I don't know. like a more interest, like that's not the interesting part of the story so often.
Certainly not. Certainly not. All right, we have now and free of his Wi-Fi, Andrew Main. So hopefully we'll be able to get a little bit more here. I like to imagine that you'd be going all throughout Los Angeles. We'll just see all the iconic Los Angeles landmarks as we travel along with you. Andrew, can you hear us?
I can hear you just fine now that I'm on LTE. That's the sad story, you know, of the era which we live in, when your internet's so reliable, you have to use your cell phone.
Yeah, well, which is a real testimony to how good cell phone technology has gotten. Like, I have stopped ever using any kind of Wi-Fi at just about any hotel, partly for security reasons, because just there is so inherently unsafe, whereas LTE is at least, you know, encrypted, and it's just you and your provider, but also because the quality of the LTE is so good these days.
Yeah, if you're in the right zone, you know, that's, if you're in the right area, that's the thing that matters most. You know, if some people go like, my battery drains or whatever, often it's because, you know, you're far away from a 10. If you're in a good spot, it's amazing. It's amazing. And like, what's frustrating, I'm doing like speed test. I'm getting pretty good upload. You know, I'm looking at my download, but it's just this intermittency there. It drives me crazy.
Hey man, what weird stuff has happened this week?
Oh gosh. So, when it comes to, we've had this thing talked about before, like how robots have beat us at Go. Robots are beating us at was it Dota that did that too? Defense of the Agents,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
or something.
Too. Yeah.
You know, but only a human can create a smile. Only a human can create things, uh-oh, right? So at least we got that.
Yeah, no, we've got the arts. They'll never be better at us than the arts.
You know, but some Georgia Tech researchers decided to let an AI play Super Mario Brothers and see if it could figure out the game engine just by watching this, knowing what the sprites were and the pixels were, or whatever. And it figured out the game mechanics for Super Mario Brother, and it could output Super Mario into different programming languages.
Wow.
Meanwhile, you have computer researchers that have found out that they can use an AI to create the best sentence in an email subject header to get you to click on it, or Twitter to trick you into it, better than a human can now. I see a convergence here that's very scary.
Do you think we'll reach... Okay, so we've reached a point in the chess world where now some of the most interesting action are computer-human hybrid teams working together. So essentially... you're playing chess. It's just you're offloading some of the heavier work and simulation running to the engine side of things. And I think about the way we still test for intelligence is absent a cell phone, even though we now live with cell phones in our hands all the time. I'm looking forward to the next version of an IQ test where you're allowed to use the internet, and because that's a more realistic depiction. Do you think that? Just as we install antivirus programs or spam filters to keep us from being easily manipulated by spam stuff, do you think we'll install filters to prevent us from seeing computer-generated, procedurally, you know, like hey, this email contains language that was very likely engineered to make you angry by looking at it? Are you sure you want to look at it, knowing that this is meant to infuriate you, to cause you to engage with it? Do you think we'll kind of install social malware protection around us?
I think it'll last 3 minutes before they figure their way around it, you know? And I think that, and also it's like, you know, we already see with our algorithms, our algorithms with Twitter and Facebook are AI, they're managed by AI that are trying to figure out contextually what gives you to spend the most time. Most people don't care, you know? So I would like for that. Let me make that very clear. I would like, but I don't know that you can tell that, you know? And what's interesting too is, you know, one of the things I heard was there was sort of this misnomer going around about, like, you know, why were things like misspelled or whatever in spam? And somebody, I think a writer, saying like, oh, it's because it appeals to, you know, uneducated people. It's like, no, it's to get past spam filters, you know? Yeah. And that's, one of the things I always find, you know, you hear these just the way it is, so just so stories, and you're like, oh yeah, it makes sense. I've heard the two people repeat that to me. I'm like, no, it's and they're like, if you're more likely to click on it, if it's misspelled, you're more likely to, if you click on it, then you're more likely to fall for it. But like, it doesn't matter if you're more likely or less likely to fall for it. If you click on it.
Yes, and there was a Freakonomics piece that talked about how the limited resource that Nigerian scammers have is their time, and the worst thing they could do is spend a lot of time with somebody savvy to what they're doing, and then only to get jerked around. And so, by writing it in a clumsy, poorly translated format, that is a good heuristic to eliminate a certain segment of the populace from engaging.
I guess I'm aware of that. That was what some of the people they talked to said. But it comes down to is it's the explanation that has made the most sense to me is that once you click spam, that imprint of that email gets there. So you try to modify these things continuously to do that.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it, I'm sure.
And your higher value target are actually people who are wealthy, but maybe not that, you know, you want the person with the bank accounts who can put $75,000, who does have this sort of stuff, not the person who's living paycheck to paycheck, who's subliterate. Like myself.
Well, the stuff I've read on it, and I'm not going to pretend to be an authority, despite having made a video on it, was that they look for a slow bleed, and you kind of do want the low wage paycheck jockeys because
well, you want somebody who has a bank account helps, you know, that's one of the things, and can do transfers and stuff. Like again, it depends upon the scam, and that could be different approaches. But one of the reasons these things are often so frequently misspelled, though, is to trick the spam filters. That was the primary reason. Because you got
to have a ticket into the dance, right? And that's that. Like no matter what your strategy is, once you're there, you got to get in. Because if you're caught in the spam filter, then people ain't seeing what it is.
But to the larger point though, like, are we gonna? I would love to see benevolent AI. But in Brian, to your point, I would love to see, you know, I would love more things, financial apps or things like that, tools that are able to help us, you know, navigate this thing and navigate our time, spend our money, and do these things instead of AI being used against us, which it is,
right,
in an economic sense.
I guess that's you know, reading stuff like your recommendation of the attention merchants was so good in that it made me realize what an important commodity people's attention is. I don't know. It seems like as more people become aware of it, that people will wrap themselves up. I guess we already see people wrapping themselves up in filters. You know, people live in these Facebook bubbles, but they're not healthy filters. It would be interesting to I'd pay money for a filter that kept me from wasting my time on, you know, reading a comment and getting mad at it and responding.
There's probably a healthy progression, right? Or a healthier progression that like could be algorithmically sorted that, hey, look, for every one stupid comment, there are two other elements to your video that you should watch, right? That it's like, hey, look at this improvement on the last video and look at that. Now let's couple, areas where you can improve with a dumb comment that it's like, okay, well, in this context, now I can understand this better. But like Andrew's saying, I think that right now the biggest question is for something that would be fairly challenging to put together systematically, is there money there in the way that there is money in creating these AIs to, you know, affect you as opposed to make your life better?
Instead of the antibodies, yeah.
Google and Facebook I don't see them doing that. You know, Google subtly changed the language, by the way, in their terms of service about email filtering. You know, they said, no, we're not going to do that anymore and do the ads in the email. Now they've actually changed that, which means that Google is looking to do a new contextual email service, you know, to do even more contextual ads with your email, whatever. And again, you know, we're all on the same page. Like, if you sign up for this is what you're signing up for, you know, to bemoan like, ah, they're invading my privacy. Well, you said yes. You know, this is this company, which is a multi-billion-dollar company that has to increase its rates of revenues by selling the advertising and by monetizing you as a user. This is what they're going to do. What did you think? Did you think that don't do evil, which they don't say anymore? You know, guys, we have this way to make billions more. I'm sorry. Sorry, Frank. Get out of the room. This is not what we do here.
Uh, Yeah, I wonder if it's a if I guess that's the problem is I don't know if there's much of a premium market. I don't know that many people will sign up for, you know, $1,000 a year machine learning service that watches everything that you type and figures out what bottom, you know, 30% is the least productive and filters content to keep you steer you away from that stuff.
You know, but Brian, there might be, you know, people watch our shows and do what we do. We push things, we do stuff, but they know that we are just as invested in reputation and being good people as we are in success. And we will often make choices for reputation instead of financial, you know. And there may be opportunities if we move into VR and we move into other stuff. There might be opportunities for creating, you know, environments and stuff. Again, we're all big free market like capitalists here, but we also put value on things. And I think that I could see an era where it's like, you know, people spend stupid amounts of money to go buy organic foods and things like that, you know. And I could see that there's a willingness to say, you know what, I want to spend a little less time with more quality interactions and not with the machine, you know. So maybe.
Yeah, I guess in my mind, I think in terms of like diseases and antibodies, right? So the disease is spam, and then the antibody, the generation one is, you know, install a spam filter. Then disease 2.0 is get smart with your spellings and work around spam filters. And then antibody 2.0 is Gmail. You know, there's now like a community, and this is kind of a problem as you and I encounter. It's more of an after things. You know, when we send marketing emails, you know, all of those email companies talk to each other and they have reputation scores of coming from here, whatever. So, I wonder if and now we're dealing with a new disease vector of time wasting, you know, clickbait headlines and incendiary subjects, just designed to draw engagement. And I'm wondering what the antibody on that will be.
Yeah. But you know, what's interesting though, is that we've actually seen, you watch one group will start to do a thing, and you saw like the headlines, you saw big major news sites are using the clickbaity headlines, and then advertisers started using that more and more. And then some ad companies are smarter than others, and you saw that, but actually you're starting to see a decline because some of the people you want to reach, they see that immediately, and they're like, the brain just goes, oh, that's clickbait, 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 clickbait. And now what you're looking for is the trusted sources thing, which, you know, who do I trust? Who do I trust? And that's why you had all this conversation about fake news and trust and who do you trust? Because now how do you do that? But you go to sites that were just pillaring other people for fake news and stuff, and you look at how their sponsored content, the thing that tells you that sponsored content, how faded the text is, you know, how they're trying to trade off their name for the sponsored content. But, you know, it's not too scammy, so we're okay with it. And we know a lot of people are clicking on this thinking that it's a story. And these are people that would yell at somebody else for doing something unethical 2 or 3 years ago. But the market they're in now, they don't do that. They get no ad dollars.
Yeah. I don't know.
Everything's a lie. Everything's a lie.
Sorry, back to the original point, the machine learning stuff. Do you think that, we got machines writing articles now, you know, sports articles that seem to be every bit as good? Have you ever busted, Justin, a sports article that you figured out was written by a machine? From what I understand, they use them to live update games as they're happening and so on.
Gamers, which is primarily what they're doing, is just writing up a you know, what is called in the industry a gamer, which is just the like player, you know, team did this. This was the final score. They won based on the performance of blank, who had blank, right? Like, they're so mechanical in general that, to be honest, I don't know if you would be able to tell a well-written gamer with an Associated Press tag from something that was machine-written. So no, I think that Turing test has long since been passed.
But, you know, when it comes to the bigger commentary, that's different. But, you know, there was an article that came out a while ago about this guy who was writing thousands of Amazon books a day because he was using kind of a clumsy AI just to group a bunch of words and sentences and stuff, and they were unreadable. And, you know, and some writers are like, yeah, you see, that's why machines can't do it. And I'm like, no, this is – don't look at the crappy version of it now. You know, I love Amazon. I am very, very happy being an Amazon published author. They've made my writing career, but I have no doubt that there is probably a building somewhere where they're working on AI to try to say, you know what? We got rid of the, we could come out with these stories a little bit faster if we weren't waiting for these authors to do that. So
is it, does there exist software already that can combine, you know, what's the cliche is that you go into a meeting and the pitch is always, it's Mythbusters meets the Donut Factory. You know, what
happened? Damn it, Brian, you weren't going to tell about our show.
But I would imagine there's a software that could mash up two ideas, sketch out a three-act structure, take procedural elements of the hero's journey, and then give you a two-page synopsis outline and say, human, write the words to adhere to this story.
You could, if you, in a sort of sense, you could put in enough, like, these are things that fit formula and stuff. You know, the hardest part is context, and machines are getting better and better. And after I think after things, we'll talk about Apple's announcement, by the way, and some of the really cool things that are under the hood that are probably going to change everything, and some things Google's doing too. But context is everything, but machines are getting better at context. Like, you know, the story started where, you know, this is a machine that watched, you know, Mario Brothers. It has no idea what this thing is. It just sees points on a screen, points and just data points, and says this is the correlation there, et cetera. But there's a point where you get machine learning. It's sophisticated enough that it looks at, you know, you take all those books that Google's ingested. It starts to read them and read. We already can have computers can create like hit tunes. They understand enough about like how to create a good beat or whatever. Probably song lyrics will be first because you just have to have a slight amount of context and it matters more about how it sounds. I see computers generating music that will be successful first. But then as it understands and it does little things like, you know, this sentence worked pretty well and this worked really well. It'll build a human version to say to reader and then whatnot. Yeah. Yeah. My days are numbered, guys.
Should we? Well, I guess all of us, though, it's the part that terrifies me is this level of like there's a when the machine learning gets good enough, it seems like all it needs is enough video and enough content to examine, to figure out predictable patterns of behavior. And gentlemen, I don't know if you know this, we've got a bit of video out there of us reacting in very predictable ways.
We get like the Mars Venus or this, you know, the space elevator debate. I mean, Brian and Andrew are going to react in a very predictable way. It's going to be a very predictable way, which is sort of the saddest part of all.
Well, and so like I don't know. This is why I'm convinced we're gonna become, you know, I don't know, some weird biological hybrid thing.
I hope so. I mean, Brian, I hope so. And I am excited because, like, you know, I've been working with tools like natural language processing. You know, my Story Voice app, which I mentioned again, I'll show you behind the time some scenes sometimes. Like, I speak a sentence. This AI takes that sentence and then it converts into words. Then this other little line of code says, oh, this is a pronoun. This is a noun. Oh, now I know what this is because of the context there. And boom, I get to now say, oh, I got a pronoun, noun, whatever. And now I can figure out where the punctuation goes. 5 years ago, it was impossible. I mean, I would have needed a team of 30 software engineers and computer scientists to do this. Now it's just two lines of code and the machines magically do this. So I get to leverage the machine and, you know, what's happening with machine learning and other stuff, you know, make friends with our masters now. So speaking of making friends, Brian and Justin made two friends on what?
Well, that's because it's time for Journey Quest.
Previously on
Journey Quest.
And you come to a mesa.
Magnum PI. Hitler.
Oh no!
Ride this.
Don't
up.
Get onto Z platforms. It's a trap. And he sounds an awful lot like Hitler. My name is Adolfina Hitler.
Adolfina.
We have much to talk about.
All right. So we encountered Hitler. By the way, separate side note. You guys are watching Preacher, right? Like the finale is tonight, and the side plot with the buddy escape comedy with featuring Hitler is amazing.
Yeah. I'm a couple episodes behind, but show's great. I love it.
I have yet to start it. Can't wait, though. But that's not what we're here to talk about. So you guys are on board the Hindenburg X. It's 10 times the size of the original Hindenburg. You're sitting in a lounge with the Lady Hitler, and Bryce found a very sexy-looking Nazi lady.
It was not me. I did not make those. Steven.
Oh, yeah, sorry. The person who put that together did a really good job of that. And so she's like, gentlemen, and by the way, somebody threw you guys a Luger, Hitler, other Hitler threw you guys a Luger. So so you have a Luger. So Lady Hitler, you're sitting down in this lounge, nice plush chairs. Ladies and gentlemen, so I've been looking very, very, very far for you.
Well, you found us, lady. What can we do for you? And I try to cross my arms, which is a little bit weird. And I take off the chainsaw off my right hand stump and fold my stump over my arm skeptically, right, with an eyebrow arched.
She says, I have a plan. The world is in disorder. And then she starts to speak in perfect English. She says, the world's in disorder, guys. And we faced this apocalypse. It's devastating. I'm trying to bring order back to the world, and I want your help. I need your help to do this. I'm going to go make myself a martini. Do you guys want anything while you discuss?
Okay. Hey, Justin.
Oh, by the way, I come from I'm Good Hitler, just so you know. I'm a good Hitler.
Okay, look, quit guessing what we're about to gossip about. What is your platform of order? Can you just give me the bullet points on it?
Discipline. Number one, discipline's good.
Is purity anywhere on the list?
Purity, yes. Of heart, Brian. Of heart.
Purity of heart.
Purity of heart.
I don't know.
Right. Brian. So, number one, anybody understand? Apparently, they wiped out society with whatever plague happened, but they rapidly multiplied the amount of Hitlers that
you know what? Maybe the disease
lousy with Hitlers in this post-apocalyptic society.
Real quick, I check and see if the Adolf OS is still latent in my system, and I say, Adolf, are you still there, buddy? You got anything? Maybe we're connected to Hitler Wi-Fi.
And a very sexy Adolf says, hello, Brian. I'm so glad to be here to serve you. How may I assist you?
Wait, this is in my head. This is, the OS is upgraded. Okay. Sexy Adolf in my bloodstream nanobots.
Reich OS 3.0.
What can you tell me about the Hindenburg X? Where are we headed?
The Hindenburg X is one of the most finest flying machines ever constructed.
Do I have any access to any of the strength or special power upgrades?
No, Brian, you have the power to relax and enjoy.
I switch it off. All right, Justin. Look.
But when you switch it off, you do see like a little bit of like a little Windows like OS screen prompt. Like there's a little glitch there.
Huh.
Like maybe it was slapped together a little quickly. Like maybe they got rid of like a certain percentage of their engineers a little bit too fast before they should have finished the OS.
Boy, isn't that the problem with Reich-based OSs?
I know. There's got to be a better way.
All right, Justin. Look, she's wearing do we?
Okay, so let's go ahead and explain to everybody how this goes. And you can tell me if this is not going to be how it happens.
Okay.
So I'm going to say we're on this ship. We might as well trust them at least to see where we go, and then we can make a decision. You are going to agree with me, and then as soon as we agree with them to go do something, you will immediately think that their plan has gone awry and begin murdering people. So you tell me either A, you want to know what? You might as well try to start murdering people right now because we know that that's going to happen. Or we can make a promise that we're not going to start murdering people until we both agree that it's time to murder people.
I hang my head in shame and I nod solemnly and put my chainsaw in my rucksack and I see if there's maybe a fake hand in the rucksack.
So
also, I have a rucksack.
You have a rucksack with random. Apparently, you're Felix the Cat with your rucksack. For hip references, hashtag kids. So you have to promise me that it's two keys on the murder machine.
Right, I say, I pinky swear, but then I hold up my
the
stump.
Real hand.
I hold up my stump and I say, pinky promise, bro. Two key solution.
This injury has made me a moralless person who has no compunction to truth or honesty because I cannot pinky swear.
Okay, I put up my left hand pinky and I pinky swear. All right,
so we're going to pinky swear. Let's understand that either of us trust this bizarre, literal neo-Nazi regime.
I guess it's neo-Nazi.
We are not going to just jump out of this Hindenburg that has rescued us from certain death.
Okay. All right. I'm in.
All right. So Adolfina comes back into the room, brings you guys, you know, some drinks, and they're actually, they're fine German craft beers. You just sit back like, these are really good. These are like really, really good beers. You know, she's like, yeah, I thought you would like this. So, as you know, you may have encountered other Hitlers. As you know, there's infinite universes out there, and you know, things play out differently in each one. I was hesitant to meet with you all because I visited a universe. Well, you know, when you talk about Justin and Brian, that is the worst form of insult, and it's how you just settle an argument. You say like, "Oh, well, you're just like Justin and Brian."
I look askance. I glare significantly over at Justin.
I shake my head solemnly. No, we don't turn the keys on Justin and Brian. Let me ask you a question.
In my own world, I've gone through some. She says, "In my own world," she looks wistfully out the window at the passing clouds. I've had my own unpopularity. You know. when I killed off the undesirables.
Glancing very significantly.
It was not a popular decision with some, but it had to be done. You understand.
Wait, when did this happen?
She reaches her finger over towards a button. Reaching towards the button.
Glaring very significantly.
Should one of you roll perception to see if you're standing on a trap door, maybe?
Like, did you do something? And well, you are. You look down, you realize you're all sitting on trap doors, by the way.
I mutter under my breath, hit off OS. Do you have access to disable these trap doors underneath us?
There may be a way to hack this.
You attempt to hack.
Oh, everything goes haywire. Your trap door automatically opens and you fall, Brian. You fall. Justin's chair's over on the edge, right? And he almost falls, but he catches himself, and Adolfina grabs Justin, pulls him back into the Zeppelin. What did your friend do? I'm sorry, I canceled the TV show The Undesirables, but it had to go. Being a TV producer is not easy. and she quickly grabs a parachute, throws it down through the hatch towards Brian, who's heading down into dense jungle, and he flattens out and the parachute hits him, and Brian grabs the parachute.
Good. I pull the cord of the parachute and examine the territory below.
So meanwhile, Adolfina says to Justice, listen, we can't land this here. This is 1,000 miles of jungle. Your friend is going to have to figure out how to. Why would he do this? Why would he try to hack the system and get the overrides to eject him from here? Who does this?
Well, the good news for you, Adafina, is that it was better than the alternative. however, we do need to go get him. We might not be able to land, but we have to dispatch somebody to go get him.
I'm going to go to my radio. I'm going to dispatch somebody. I'm going to try to find some. She picks up radio, says, listen, here are my coordinates. We have a man missing. I need to get a search team there. I'm going to have to land in the pre-planned designation. It's the only place I can land this thing. Please, somebody go get him. All right?
All right. I demand that I need to be with the group that goes to get him.
Well, we have to go land first, and this is what we need to do. In order to organize a group, we need people. And we're going to New Brycetown, which has gone through a lot of chaos, and it's the first stop on my campaign trail to become leader of the New World Order, and I need you to help me plan my campaign. So what you can do is you could write me a speech that we could rally them together to help us go on a search for Brian.
Do I see any other parachutes around?
You do? There are other parachutes there.
I run, grab a parachute, and I jump out of the Hindenburg, therefore trying to save us from another 2 episodes of separate storyline.
If only you knew. If only you knew. Oh, but you land 100 miles apart. The Zeppelin was going fast. Brian lands into the middle of the jungle. He's trapped up in the trees. He's trying to unfasten himself, and he lands, and he sees eyes watching him. He's already aware that he's surrounded.
I reach into the rucksack, and I reattach my chainsaw.
And all of a sudden, something comes at you.
I remember the solemn promise I gave to Justin.
Flies through. Some object flies through the air.
I remember the promise I made, but also I just feel more comfortable wearing this chainsaw. It's fine.
Small object.
Is it past me? Is it?
It's coming at you, coming right at you.
Oh, I just dodge. I move out of the way. I attempt to dodge.
But your chainsaw hits it anyway, so you split the orange in half and you hear, ooh, 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 ooh. And then you see chimpanzees crawl out from around and look at you in complete awe, Brian.
I hold my arms akimbo and say, who needs an orange cuts?
They roll tons of oranges to your feet, Brian.
I begin to dice and julienne oranges in ways not even conceivable to this tribe of chimpanzees.
The chimpanzees are clapping, they're hooting, they're dancing. They're so thrilled, Brian.
I say, this has been great. Is there any people? I say that hoping they know English.
They look at you confused, but they're a little amused. They like your comedy, Brian.
Okay. I wave goodbye and set off in the general direction that the Hindenburg X was traveling.
All right. And you head off in that direction. And behind you, 100 chimpanzees follow single file.
I wave and I say, just as we go, if you guys need any oranges cut, let me know. You guys are pretty cool. Do you guys have a name? I start to name them after 18th century authors.
Okay.
Like who?
How many 18th century authors can you name, Brian?
I instantly regret my decision and decide it's 20th century authors. 100 on.
Hey, you want to know what would be a good nomenclature for 100 apes? Numbers. Yeah.
I have the completely independent thought that maybe numbers are better. And I say, you're number one.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Come on, number one.
He starts to rub his number one in all the others' faces. He just starts just dancing up and down that he's number one. And every now and then he runs up to him and goes, holds up number one and points to himself, asking you if he's still number one.
I say, you know what? Forget it. You're Mr. Brown. This cool. they're all colors. Everyone wants to. There is no Mr. Black, because then everybody just fights about being Mr. Black.
All right. Meanwhile, Justin, who is parachuted to a different part of the jungle, is entering the leafy canopy, gets trapped, undoes his parachute. He has a general idea where Brian is. He lands in a sprawled out position like a ninja. It's really, really, really cool. And he hears a voice go, "Hey, I heard about you."
Who's there?
We don't know. We'll find out next time on Journey Quest.
Oh, man.
Hey. Don't worry. You'll be reunited, Justin. Don't worry. I know how this works, okay?
Right. Dude, he's like the Cylons. He's got a plan, and it will definitely make sense in the end.
Yeah. I like that finding the trap door, your first response wasn't to just get off of it.
Yeah.
I thought I had a clever end, because I still had latent Adolf-related technology.
You also like, had two feet.
After it was corrupted, and you knew it was corrupted?
And just so you know, I had like multiple, well, if they do this, this is what's going to happen. If they do this, this is what's going to happen. So this is the first time I ever planned out like,
oh, that's great. We got a branching tree structure. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. It was like, oh, okay. You don't want to go to Barter Town? That's good, because I got another plan for you.
You want to do picks? I read a book that I didn't expect. For the life of me, I don't know who recommended this book, but it was one of those moments where I thought it was one person. At any rate, it was like, hey, this is a really good book. You should read it. And so I bought it, finally listened to it. It's the audiobook of A Gentleman in Moscow. It takes place shortly after, the Bolshevik Revolution. This is fiction, as far as I know. And it's about a dude who comes back after the revolution because he's the Archduke of something or other. He's a count. That's what he is. He's a count in the former aristocracy. And rather than putting him up against the wall, they assign him to house arrest in the hotel that he loves. But he now essentially works there and has nothing and is trapped there. And it covers like a good 40-year spread, you know, it ultimately reaching the beginnings of the Cold War. The language used is so hypnotic to me, but it's all written in the very aristocratic patois that normally would not appeal to me, but I found utterly hypnotic and loved it. So you get a bunch of a sense of real propriety, where it's like, you know, the mere fact that he's under house arrest and that he's lost everything that he ever loves to him isn't going to get him down. And so he just goes about working and being at this hotel. It's interesting and adorable. And I had the curious situation of last night sitting at a bar, a sports bar, where everybody had the Cowboys game on, and I'm looking at this image of force-fed Americana and crass Verizon advertisements. Meanwhile, like, choking back tears of happiness as I listened to the end of this book about an aristocrat in a post-revolution Moscow. So I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Awesome.
Sounds awesome.
Hey, it's 9/11, and that means everybody's going to talk about 9/11. So this is
that was not a true fact until you made it true.
No nice way to get into it. Up in the pool.
So is there a pick associated?
I'm learning about the attack on 9/11. The book The Looming Tower, I very often said, is probably the most comprehensive explainer of how that attack not only came together, but also the reasons behind it and how close we came to stopping it. It is being made into a drama on Hulu that will debut in October. So now would be a good time to check it out. The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda, and the Road to 9/11, written by Lawrence Wright. Go check it out.
Yeah, dude, I read that based on your recommendation like half a decade ago, and I really enjoyed it. It especially draws into stark contrast the perception of Al-Qaeda as a group of masterminds, and then instead, you know, really portrays them as, I think you put it, Justin, the F troop of Muslim extremists.
Yeah, and kind of how that organization evolved and how it kind of went in and out of favor with various influential governments. And it's a fascinating story. And man, when you get to how close we were to stopping that, and how clear the picture was if there were more, you know, interdepartmental cooperation, it'll you know, drive you up a wall. But go ahead and check it out.
My father had been involved in investigating like a series of bombings between different mosques in the 80s, and was frustrating for him as he would report up the chain about, hey, you've got this extremist group getting funding from overseas. They're doing this. This should be of concern to us because it's not just a domestic squabble. There's a network doing this kind of thing. And then, you know, we spent the 80s and 90s dismantling, you know, we had a reaction kind of post Watergate, which was like, let's keep the FBI and the CIA from talking to each other, because part of it was like there was certain very valid civil liberties things to deal with. And in the 90s, we actually dismantled, you know, some of the things that made it easier for them to talk and communicate. And, you know, there was a price, you know.
Yeah,
there's a price, you know.
So go check it out.
Yeah. My pick is, man, I'm going to double down what I picked before. Like, this season of Rick and Morty has been different, and there's been some standout episodes. I haven't felt quite as like I did with, you know, some other seasons where I felt like, you know, each one just resonated for me. I mean, all these have been good. All these have been good. Last night I thought was exceptional.
I did not catch last night's episode. I forgot all about it.
Oh, you're going to have a good time with that.
Okay. Should I know anything?
No.
Okay, great.
No.
It was good.
I'll tell you one thing. It's theoretically a standalone episode. It's what like the description calls it.
Yeah.
Great.
It's very good.
Yeah. It is really... It's just a whole lot of them hitting what they do, and then you realize, oh my God, this is what I'm watching unfold right now here. This is what I'm watching unfold right here, and that they did this in 22 minutes is insane.
I might have to try to watch that.
You should.
I mean, before Cord Killers,
especially because I think it's a Cord Killer show.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's my pick. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.